listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right, welcome everybody. You are officially on the couch with Dr. Michelle Cohen. That's me. And today we are talking to an amazing, inspirational author and about his latest book. And I know you're going to get inspired by what he has to say. And also when you check this book out, here it is, Franklin Rock by Mark E. Klein, MD. This is his third book, and this time it's a novel and it's a page turner. It's amazing. And it has to do with so many of the concepts that you understand that I have been involved in and share with you all out there for many years. So this novel sort of blends time, things that I love to talk about, and also time travel with metaphysical inspiration, and presents the case for hope by presenting a hero for all humanity. And of course, thanks to my guest today, physician Mark E. Klein, MD. And again, he authored this book. We're going to find out more about it and the exciting journey that our protagonist went through, Franklin Rock. Thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Klein. It's great to have you here today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I'm very excited.
Oh, good. We'll have fun because I love the topics that you write about. And what an amazing book. It's a page turner. I mean, the journey was, you didn't want to put it down because it was so exciting. It was really fun. So you've got a lot going on in there and amazing things that you've brought to the table. Let me tell you all about Mark, Dr. Klein. He's a physician, of course, and an author. This is his third book, like I said. His career has been centered on caring for others, whether they be patients, colleagues, strangers. You know, he's always a teacher, sometimes of new medical technologies to other physicians from around the nation and also around the world, for that matter. And also more important issues of life that none of us can avoid. And he continues to practice medicine right now in Washington, D.C. But so nice to have you, Dr. Klein. And I was really intrigued by this introduction bio on the back. It says, you know, you're involved in teaching more important issues of life that none of us can avoid. So that, what is that about? What are those issues?
Actually, those are a lot of the issues that are the themes in Franklin Rock. You know, I think all of us have a responsibility to teach each other, certainly to listen, to teach each other, to take care of each other. I like to say the one thing this pandemic has shown everybody is that we need each other.
Oh, boy.
That's the message, right? Nobody I won't say nobody. Most of us do not like alone. And we miss the interactions, we miss the relationships, which to me, I'm sure you're a clinical psychologist, I'm sure you'll agree, relationships are the underpinning of our world. That's what the whole story is. I like to say everything else that happens is just a set, but the relationships, the stories of our interactions are the same through generations.
That is so true. I agree with you. And I just love those themes. That's what it's all about. And if more people got into that consciousness in this world, which we're going to be talking about, and how we can share some of that positivity and love and sort of back down a little bit. And as I always say, sort of get our own egos out of the way.
Get them out of the way.
Get them out of the way.
My first book is like a self-help book, but there's a chapter in it called Ego Lessons.
Right. There you go.
Right, we should all have to take ego lessons when we're in school.
It's true. The book was What Do I Do Now? Is that the handbook of life
that
you wrote?
I wrote.
Right.
It was like 100 years ago.
No, it's terrific. And then the second book, The Currency of Life, Uncovering the Clues of Why We're Here. Right.
That book is basically about why we're here in the first place. What's the purpose of life?
Yes.
And there's a lot of that in Franklin Rock, too. So, you know, Franklin Rock, you know, people say, why'd you write a novel after writing two nonfiction books?
Right.
And I thought, you know, everybody likes stories.
Yeah.
Everybody likes a good story. I said, well, gee, if I can tell a really good story and jam it full of some good stuff, that'd be great. So I like to call it ice cream with vegetables in it, right? So,
oh, yes.
It's a terrible analogy because who would go into Baskin Robbins and order, I'll put the ice cream with the vegetables in it? Nobody. But about it. It's what it is. It's hopefully a sweet, good story that, you know, people will enjoy. But inside are a lot of good vegetables, a lot of good things that I think are all of us benefit by thinking about.
It's really true. I agree. And thank you for that. Let me just give listeners and viewers a little intro to this. Franklin Rock is the protagonist. Here he is. Stuck in time. I love that. His story begins in college when a series of unexplained visions and events shake his world and reveal a future he could never have imagined. In one extraordinary moment, a brief but crystal clear glimpse into that future. And he learns that his life is to be an adventure unlike any other. He has a lot of guides and Professor Niemeyer, I believe, who helps him on the way, sort of like Siddhartha meets Forrest Gump. So we're going to be talking about how he encounters a lot of amazing world leaders and thought leaders and some of the discussions he has, say, like with Albert Einstein and Martin Luther King Jr., who he also gets to talk to, as well as Carl Jung, with the psychology involved and the shadow part of ourselves and things like that. So we'll talk about that, which is really fascinating. So many of Franklin's journeys teach us that, you know, life is not what we think, right? That we assume that life is exactly the way it is, linear, third dimension, Newtonian, but he sort of breaks out of all those things. So what does Franklin teach us about life and our perceptions?
Right. So the world, you know, in one of my other books, I think part two of the second book I wrote was called, or the first part was called, The World Is Not What You Think. And the second part was What the World Is. Because right. Most people, I think, have an inaccurate view of what the world is. And remember, I'm a science guy, right? I'm a doctor. I go to medical school, do all the training, read journals all the time. It's, you know, just show me the facts, right?
Right.
And every once in a while, though, if you lived a while, you get mad with these things that don't exactly fit. So I got very interested years ago into really what is the underlying story? Is there something else going on? I think most people, when you get to a certain point in your life, unless you've been paying no attention, you realize there's another story. I don't know what it is. I don't know where it is, but there's another story. So I started doing a lot of research, introspection, things like that. So one of the things I got onto is time. And you mentioned time in your introduction. Time, to me, is one of the most interesting topics there is. And it's something that's almost universally misunderstood. If I can take a moment and explain, if that's okay. I think this is. So most of us, if somebody would say to you, well, explain to me about time. Most people would say, well, it's like that timeline you learn in high school. You know, you got this line. And on the left side is like Mesopotamia. And then the Greeks, the Romans, and blah, blah, blah. Then you get to the 20th century and all the horrible things and the wars. And that's all gray. And all of a sudden, there's a spotlight shining on what we call now, the moment we're in. Like you and I, we're having a conversation. We call that now. Of course, now keeps changing every second, but still now.
Right.
And everything to the right is a blank. There's nothing there. It's a blank sheet of paper. There's nothing on that timeline. I think that's how many people, most people probably think about time. It's not. It's wrong. And this is not metaphysics. This is not astrology. This is Albert Einstein talking. So
Albert,
in a much more eloquent way, he would explain what I'm going to try to explain now. So a good way that I think to look at time is to think of it as a jukebox. So most of us know what a jukebox is. So imagine a jukebox filled with records, but each record is a moment of time. And we're going to put it in chronological order. So the first moment of time is the record all the way to the left as you face the jukebox and just keep going.
Right.
You play that first record, the first moment of time, you play the record. What happens when you play a record in a jukebox? The music plays, goes, and the record, what happens to the record? Does it blow up? Does it disintegrate? Does it go away? No. It just goes right back in the spot. And then the next one plays and so on. That's how time is. Every moment exists in its own place forever. Now, what does that mean? That sounds kind of like, who cares, right? But the reason you should care is because every moment you've had in your life is still playing, that record. Moments don't go away. It's not just a memory. It's actually happening. So here's why it's so valuable right now in the middle of this pandemic. We've all lost friends, people we know, loved ones. It's been a lot of tragedy, right? We've lost 5,000 people from the pandemic. And as I like to say, the other diseases haven't taken a holiday.
Yes, absolutely.
Heart disease didn't call up coronavirus and say, look, you killed 500,000 people this year. I'm taking the year off, right?
Yeah.
We got a lot of loss. But yes. When you think about it, when you realize that every moment lives forever, so that if you think about playing with one of your children or being with your parent or your grandparent, any moment of time of your life, it's still happening.
Yes.
It's not the past. It's still happening. To us, it's the past, but it's quite alive. When you think about that, it really means that we never really lose anybody. The whole concept of death is incorrect in the sense that you are forever alive in those moments of your life. To me, I find that very comforting. To
know yes, it is.
That we cherish are not gone. They're not just in our head as memories or to be forgotten. They are existing just as real as this moment that we're talking and people are listening and watching.
That's beautifully said. I love the jukebox metaphor. That is so cool. I think that's great.
Albert Einstein famously said to us believing physicists, the past, present, and future are just an illusion. Well, because there's one more thing about that jukebox I just want to finish up with is that all the records to the right of this future, they're already playing. The future has already occurred.
Right.
The future exists just as real as the moment of now and in the moments in the past. And people go, wait a minute. You're telling me the future's already happened? Yeah. I'm telling you the future's already happened. I can't explain now. Can we adjust it? Can we change it? There's a lot of things we don't have time to get into. But the point is, the future, those moments of the future are just as alive and real as the moments of the past. We just can't see them at the moment, but they exist.
Are those moments of the future? Now we're getting off a little bit away from the book, but I mean, it also relates to Franklin Rock, your book. Are those moments in the future definitely predetermined, or we can change them with our will? We can change them.
Great question. So the short answer is I have no idea. Because nobody has an idea. But it does bring up the issue of free will. Do we really have free will? Mm-hmm. And there's a chapter in the book, Franklin's talking to his mentor, Professor Niemeyer, and they talk about free will. And I think just the short answer is probably some, but not as much as you think.
Interesting. All right. So it's written, perhaps, and or whatever you want to say, predetermined. Perhaps there are certain things that we can change, possibly. And when you say the memories of, you know, growing up, or, you know, all these little, as I call them, flashbulb moments, which may have been traumatic for us, or, you know, the loving times with our family, etc., or the trauma, of course, those are always there to the forefront many times, unfortunately. But are those a mechanism from the memory, like the hippocampus, or are these all existing as we might say in the field of consciousness? And when we decide to tune into those memories or whatever, they're coming back to us from that quantum field.
I think we do have memories. For sure we have memories. But the point is that it's not all we have. Those moments exist. They are real. Yes. They're just as real as the one we are now. And that's a very hard thing for people to wrap their heads around.
Right,
When I first learned about how time works, this is all Albert Einstein's theory of special relativity. That's what we're discussing.
Yes.
When I first learned this, I was like, wait a minute. Does anybody else know this? Because this is absolutely crazy.
Yes.
And then the more you think about it, you start to realize the repercussions or the conclusions one can draw. And one of them, as I mentioned to you, is extremely comforting because the idea of death changes completely. You never lose anybody. Now, I get the fact that those people who are listening to this who have lost loved ones go, well, they're not next to me.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Well, I was writing Franklin Rock, I lost my dog of 12 years.
Oh.
Now, I have four kids, I have a wife, I love them all.
Yes.
But I still love my dog. And people who realize that pets are living, they're alive. They're real things.
Oh, they are conscious beings,
They are conscious beings. And so it was very comforting to me when this happened to realize he's still with me. I'm still with him. You know, these are not just, what I want to stress is that these are just not hopeful thoughts. This is the way the world works.
Yes.
Why it works that way, that's a really interesting topic.
That
is how it works, for better or for worse. That is how it works.
I agree. I think you nailed it here in this book. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest, excuse me, Mark E. Klein, MD. And he's written this book called Franklin Rock. It's a journey about our protagonist here who's stuck in time. He's actually not stuck. He gets to travel back and forth in different time periods, the present, the past, and of course the now. And he's learning all these amazing lessons about life, from some of the greatest thinkers in the whole world and in the history of the world. So let's talk about, now that we've covered time and we feel so much better and calmer about that. By the way, I agree with you with everything in terms of what we've learned. I also think, side note, I also believe that we can connect with those who've passed on. Like you said, they're never lost. They're always there.
You know what's interesting about that is that I used to think people who could predict the future were just nonsense, you know, the Nostradamuses of the world. And certainly people who thought they connected things in the past, that's more nonsense. That's how I felt. I'm a science guy, right?
Yes, you are.
You realize that time all sense contemporaneously, then you have to sort of go, maybe I'm wrong. There are connections. Maybe there is another level to this. And again, I'm not trying to be.
Oh, no.
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Once it doesn't exist, the idea of communicating with it doesn't becomes impossible. In fact, Franklin has a recurrent line in the book that's a very important theme. It's that Professor Niemeyer says to Franklin, "Franklin, if you pay attention, you can see the future in the past."
Yes.
That's the theme that runs through the book. And what exactly does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out in something called quantum physics, which I'm not a quantum physicist, but there's some of this in Franklin Rock. But when you learn about quantum physics, that's another crazy thing that when you realize how the world works, that's even more bizarre. So yes. For anybody who wants to really be wowed by what this world really is, learn some quantum physics. I mean, on a very superficial level, you don't have to go to, Caltech and learn about it. But clearly, when you learn about these things, the possibilities open up wide. You open your mind to what you might have thought was impossible.
Yes.
Now I'm not so sure. And I'm not a crazy guy. And this is based on.
I agree.
Right? You get the idea. I had to be convinced myself.
I do.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Every moment, you can see the future from the past. From understanding the past, you can understand the future is what you were talking about. Yeah. There are
glimpses of the future in the past.
Glimpses of future in the past. There are.
I'll give you a real quick example.
Okay.
There's an experiment. We won't go into it. One of the most famous experiments of all time. It's called the double slit experiment. And it's an enigma to this day. But the only point I want to bring up is that you can make a decision in the future that affects what happened in the past. This is physics.
Yes. Yes.
Well, and you can use any analogy you want, but the idea that something that's done in the future can affect that something's done in the past, that seems completely backwards.
Right.
Doesn't time go to the right? Doesn't it go, I do
seemingly
something in the future? You're telling me that something done in the future can affect the past? That's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it's not. Now, yes. I can't explain to you why, nor can anybody on the face of the earth explain to you why. Mm-hmm. You just know that it is.
Right. That's beautiful. And perhaps, again, jumping way ahead, people who believe in the quantum consciousness who are, getting out of the high beta brain state and going into those more relaxed states to tune in to that, whatever that may be, to go into alpha or theta, to totally let go of their ego, like we talked about a little bit earlier, and go into whatever kind of meditative state to tune in, can get in touch sort of more without the noise. They can get in touch with that, whatever that may be, whatever we're talking about, that higher field. And I don't want to necessarily connect it to a religious connotation, but I can't help it when I say whatever that higher conscious energy is.
You do get stuck at that point.
Yes.
We want to be very ecumenical and we don't want to, but then all of a sudden you get to a point, you go,
yeah.
So how do I explain that something else that you're alluding to? Again, yes. I don't want to get into it either, but you do kind of, all of a sudden you find yourself staring that question in the face, right?
Right, exactly. So your protagonist here, Franklin Rock, in your book, Mark E. Klein, MD, he has a gift. He starts having these flashes. He starts having these little mystical moments of sort of situations. And he'll sometimes dream, but also sometimes he'll just close his eyes and he'll be in different situations of past and forward time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, let's talk a little bit more about his journey and some of the people who he meets. He comes into the past and meets Martin Luther King Jr. So what are some of the concepts that he brings out and in this book and he is learning from him? to teach the world.
Well, by the time we get to Martin Luther King, we're near the end of the book. I just want to talk about one character first, if you don't mind, if that's okay.
Absolutely. No, I love it. Let's go.
As you mentioned, he has this epiphany in the beginning. He realizes that in a college student, something is going to go on with his life. He don't know what it is, but he knows it's going to be really important. It turns out he's chosen. And, you know, to me, chosenness doesn't mean that you get a crown and you win the lottery. It means you've got a job, son, right?
Right, okay.
And he learns he has a mission. And I won't give away too much of the book by telling the listeners and viewers that this is his mission is nothing less than to fix the world. He's got a pretty big thing to chew off here, to fix.
Yeah. The world.
And God knows, don't we really wish we could fix the world?
Yeah.
So that's Franklin's job. And he encounters his first mentor, which is Professor Niemeyer, who continues through the book, a very fascinating character in his own right. But he actually meets some basically normal people too, very simple.
Yes.
And one of the people he meets, I think, is one of the more important characters in the book, is a man named Maurice Burnside.
Right.
And the reason I want to talk about Maurice Burnside is because I think it's very important for the time we're in and the conflicts we're having in our society now. Maurice Burnside turns out to be an 84-year-old black guy. And he meets him in the hospital. I won't go into all the details about what happens, but Maurice Burnside, this 84-year-old guy, takes his 20-year-old white kid and says, I'm going to teach you about life, but not like, listen to me, boy, is what you have to do. No, he's saying, I'm going to help you. My job, I don't know why, but I need to help you. And he teaches Franklin some of the most fundamental lessons of life. And one of my favorite lessons that he teaches him over the course of a period of time, and the two of them get extremely close, as you can imagine. It's a beautiful relationship. And it sounds like it's one way that Maurice is teaching young Franklin, but as most relationships, as you know, there's always two sides to a relationship. People are always giving and taking. There's a lot of giving here and no taking. And Maurice teaches Franklin a magic trick. And people get nothing out of this book. I hope they leave with this thought, because it really is so important for the mess we're in this country right now. That Maurice says, you know, Franklin, he says, he's teaching him about mental toughness. And he says, you know, one of the things, there's a trick in life. When things get really tough for you and when life is hard, you know, if you go instead and focus on somebody else's problems instead of your own, the burden of your own life will lift instantly. He said, when things get tough, go help somebody else.
Yes.
It's a magic trick. And it is the greatest magic trick of all time. And we watch a lot of celebrities, you know, go on TV or have interviews and they're whining about this or they're whining about that.
Right.
We had some of that recently. And Maurice would look at them and say, no. This has nothing to do with anybody but yourself. You got problems, go help somebody else. You'll feel alive.
Right.
And that
exactly.
is, like you said earlier, get your ego out of the way. Focus on other people. That to me is the greatest secret of life. If you spend your life, every time you feel yourself getting upset or depressed or unhappy or taken advantage of, which by the way, it's impossible to be taken advantage of. Don't give away your power to somebody else.
Right.
But whenever happens, just go help somebody else. And it can be something like, you know, something incredibly gracious, like working in a homeless shelter or a food bank or a friend or just somebody just so sit with an older person. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yes.
Just go help somebody else and you will feel like $1 million in your own burdens just go whoop, right up into the air. And, you know, that lesson for Maurice, you know, when I wrote that chapter, when I was done, I had tears in my eyes. I carry Maurice with me. He's a fictional character, and yet he's like become one of my best friends.
Oh, I love that.
It sounds a little weird, but I Maurice Burnside all the time, and I made him right. But
right,
such a cool guy, and so I think that to me was one of the greatest lessons that Maurice taught Franklin, and that helps Franklin move towards his mission to fix the world. But also, for all of us, it's good to be reminded of, especially in a time like this where there's so much conflict in this country. We all think we're right. Maurice would look at them and go, no, you got it all wrong.
No, I agree. And that Maurice, by the way, Burnside, that's you. I mean, you know, it's those happy tears about thank you for bringing me this joy to be able to realize that I have that capability to be Maurice Burnside. Some people don't. In my work, sometimes I just sort of a little side note. There are some people who don't have that empathy or that ability to really truly give and love and to feel that. And like you said, getting the ego out of the way, excuse me, is so important. But, you know, I think I think through just practice and action and do something for someone else, whatever it is, even if you can, they have this group here called Phone Angels. You can talk to people who are down and out and don't have the money or don't have the wherewithal. You know, if you want to just volunteer your time to listen to somebody talk or whatever, things like that, helping with the shelters, helping, you know, whatever. It's just giving to others, not only in physical action, but like I mentioned, in emotional help too. Yeah.
I said to my wife a few years ago, I said something probably more years ago than I care to recall, but I said to her, you know, I just really, I'm a doctor. So what does a doctor do every day? You help people.
Right?
Most doctors really want to get it right, and they really want to help people. And I call that the golden handcuffs of medicine. When you help a patient, and the patient looks at you and says, God, thank you so much. You made a big difference. You helped me so much. You made such a difference to me. Well, that's what gets you up in the next morning, right?
Exactly.
It's that feeling, right? And doctors aren't the only people who can do that. We can all do that. But anyway,
sure.
I felt, to me, the reason I wrote this book actually was to try and scale that ability to help people. And I told my wife one day, I said, you know, I just really feel like I just want to be able to help more and more people. And she stopped me. She said, oh God, don't say that. She said, my mother would have told you that God is listening to you and he's going to give you pounds of it, right?
Oh yes, that's
well,
right.
Don't you know that's exactly what happened? But to me, rather than it being a burden, it's like a super gift. And so I'm going to tell you an interesting story that, and this is going to sound maybe a little strange, but every day I give myself a report card, literally, like, how did I do today? And really, it's all based on how many people that I get to help. And if I had a day where I got to help a lot of people and I was successful, you get a good grade that day. If, you know, a day where either I didn't get a chance, which is very rare, but occasionally happens, or I didn't step up to the plate, bad grade.
Mm.
And I think that it's so healthy. A, you don't take yourself too seriously. B, you stay focused
right.
on the Bruce Burnside rule is go help somebody else. And you feel great.
Exactly.
It's just simple. It's almost like stealing because it's so easy.
It's
right?
really
you
true.
Create internal happiness so easily by just helping other people.
It's so true.
Anyway.
And that's beautifully said. I thank you for saying that. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Mark E. Klein, MD. He's the author of his latest book, Third One. This is a novel this time. It's called Franklin Rock. And, of course, we're going to tell you where you can find it. Best place to go usually is Amazon. If you want to find out more about Dr. Klein, it's markekleinmd.com. Am I correct on that for your website?
With an email, my middle initial, Mark E. Klein.
That's perfect.
Right.
Perfect. That's the way to do it. So, you know, talking about time and learns all these lessons because his job really is to save the world. And I agree with you 100%. I think the goal is for us to be loving and kind and gentle and listening. I think every soul on this earth needs some kind of support and understanding. And just, you know, of course, in the quantum world, we're all connected anyway.
We are connected.
So something you said, you know, about sort of taking mark of your day, Mark, and saying, well, how did I do today? What, you know, what was my score today? It's really lovely that you have that, you know, little sort of self-correction thing because you're saying, how many souls did I affect or whose heart could I touch today? And that is such an important concept because, I mean, again, and if it's all coming back to us. There's another thing, too, about the past and the future of creation. We manifest things. You were just touching on that. We say, I want to help this many people or I want more. You told your wife, I want to take on and help more people. When you have an intention and it's with your heart and you create it and you visualize it and you see it. This is not hocus pocus. This is not law of attraction. It's real physics that we know of. We can create what we want, not only through directed action, but also through thought and visualization. And there is something about connecting, you know, to that quantum energy or that quantum field to absolutely manifest that in your life.
You know, like I said, I didn't believe a lot of this stuff a long time ago.
Sure.
Like I said, I've been whacked over the head enough times. So there's something I talk about. It's actually not in the book, but it's become from the book. It's called a Franklin Rock moment.
Yes.
So what is a Franklin Rock moment?
Right.
A Franklin Rock moment, which everybody has. And as soon as you hear this, everybody's going to be nodding
yep.
their head.
Yep.
It's when a hint of the mystery of the universe is suddenly and unexpectedly revealed.
Yes.
When you think of the mystery of the universe is suddenly and unexpectedly revealed. Something happened. It's like you go, whoa. And I just had one about 20 minutes before we met. You want to hear it?
Yeah, of course.
He's actually a gynecologist. And we talk periodically. We've been working together for years. And I had just had my piano tuned for the first time in a year because we had right. I know the piano tuner is a great guy, and he came over. He just got his first shot today. He was very excited, right? So he came over, tuned my piano. He leaves, and I'm sitting there. And just as he leaves, my phone, I get a text on my phone from this doctor saying to me, and I had just been thinking about it. He says, didn't you tell me you had a piano tuner who you recommended? Now, out of nowhere, somebody who I was thinking of just sends me a question about the piano tuner who's literally walking out the door.
Wow.
Yeah, they happen to everybody. And, you know, you go, that's quite a coincidence, except it happens way too much to just be a coincidence, right?
Absolutely.
It's that I always like to say the world we see is a veneer. It's the covering.
Yes. Right? Yes.
I cannot tell you what's going on under the covering. I just know there's a lot going on.
Right.
I don't know what it is. I'm not smart enough. Right? maybe not insightful enough, maybe not intuitive enough. But I'm aware enough to realize that these Franklin Rock moments are these little hints, these little cracks in the door, cracks right. in the veneer that allow you to say. And then when you realize that, once you realize there's something more, it changes everything. Then the way you approach your life should be different, which is, if there's something more, what's the important thing? Ah, it's how I treat people. It's the relationships. It's the relationships I have with people.
Exactly.
My spouse down to the guy or who's, you know, delivering the newspaper. It doesn't matter. These are all relationships. They all matter. Ooh. And if you stop and take a moment and realize they all matter, that's the story of the world, in my view.
Yes, exactly. No, I agree with you so much. I mean, that's beautifully put, Dr. Klein. And I agree with you 100%. And like you said, it's very important for us to be mindful of how we are thinking. Because again, that which we think is reflected from the field sometimes. So if we're in anger, if we're in fear, if we're in jealousy, if we're, you know, holding on to this non-forgiveness of certain things in the past and the present, we're going to just keep creating that. And situations will keep coming to us seemingly that are creating the same thing over and over. We have to let go. We have to allow and love in the moment. And that creates even better moments. And upon those noticing moments of the, like I call it, the precious, generous moment, when we can say, aha, there you go. I had a Franklin Rock moment. There it is. That's what happened. Of course, if you start being more aware of what's going on and that these things are happening all the time, like you said, and for me, just to say, sometimes I suggest follow it up with, thank you. Thank you for that. Whoa, I could have had a V8. Thank you. You know, whatever that is, right?
Well, it's I do that too. Isn't that sweet? Well, I think that's 100% right. You know, again, the more you become aware of this, the more you realize the things that you're preoccupied with. I have news for everybody. Yeah. Mortality among humans is still 100%. You have this is a limited time engagement. It's just not like if you play the game right, you get to go again. No, you get. So what does that tell us? Death is the most important clue.
Yes.
To life. The point is, there's no winning. It doesn't matter how famous you get or how much money you have. It's all going to go away. It's all going to drop to zero.
Yep.
So it cannot be the point, right? There is a different point.
Right.
The point is, like you said, and we've been talking about taking care of other people. Kindness, generosity. And I loved what you just said about the past. To let the past. The past, we become captives to the past, which is foolish because you can't do anything about it. Even Franklin Rock, who can travel back in time, cannot change the past. But what you can do is use your life in a way that you guarantee a better future, not just for yourself, but for other people. And by doing that, like let's just say that this isn't the only life. Let's just for a second, say that it isn't, okay? Right. Well, let's just say that's a possibility. Wouldn't you say then that changes everything about this life?
Yes, it does.
So
it
in your head, if you realize, I'll give you an example. So there's some things that I call peculiarities in life. For instance, why is it that we're really dumb when we're young and teenagers, and we drop 100 miles an hour and bungee jump off cliffs and take drugs or whatever, right? Right? And ahead of us, that's a really dumb thing to do at a time when you have full identity. And yet we're really smartest at the end when we can't do anything about it.
That's so, right. What is that about?
So when you stop back and think about that, you go, yes, that is peculiar. Unless there's something else.
Yes.
Unless this is an education and you're getting ready for the next step, then it makes sense to be smartest at the end, right? That makes a lot of sense. Right?
It does. I agree. Yeah. So I've been listening. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. It's your show.
Oh, no, but it's you. It's my guest show, really. That's the way I look at it, because this is how we learn. You know, I'm just the host here. But so I've been reading and just on this note, studying a lot of what, you know, Dolores Cannon has had to say in her, she's one of the pioneers of hypnosis regression. I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but, and then you hear other things, about people who've been really regressed. And of course, people fabricate when they're under hypnosis many times. But, you know, she's written 20 books about, some of the journeys that her patients have gone into, talking about who they were in past lives or, you know, things that they experienced. And they've actually found and identified these individuals who lived in history in different times. Now, some of these are children who are talking to her as well and telling them about who they were and stuff. So these things just blow my mind, because where are they getting this information from? Well, maybe it's out in the field and they're connected and they're reliving their past again, or they're reliving a future life they may have been. I don't know. I again, like you said, I don't have the intelligence for that or the knowledge, but I'm fascinated with that. And then of course, like Dr. Eben Alexander, right? You know Dr. Eben, right? His whole thing is proof of heaven.
I actually read that book twice.
I listened to his lectures several times just to refresh every weekend. But I mean, that was, that's about his journey out of body. And this is hundreds of thousands of millions of people who've talked about this since the creation of man, and writing and all that about the experiences of near-death experiences, as they call it. So
I'll give you another clue. We do the same things. We feel the same things. We experience the same things as our parents and our grandparents and every generation. The story, as Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, is nothing new under the sun. Repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. You go, wait a minute. That's also peculiar. Why don't we just write it all down? And when you're 5 years old, somebody, you read the book or somebody reads it to you, and you know exactly what life is and what you're supposed to, and then that's it. How hard could this be? But yet that's not the way it is, because we know we have to experience these things ourselves.
Yes.
We have to experience these ourselves. You can't tell your patients about, how to deal with anxiety just with words. You have to get them to work this out themselves. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in other words, it has to be done by the person. You can't just give them a handbook and say, this is how it is. Right. So why is that? Why do we have to do that? People say, well, that's just the world is way the world is. Well, yes, but it's that way for a reason. You know, when you learn quantum physics, you realize there's infinite numbers of way the world could be.
Absolutely.
But it's this particular way. Why is that? Maybe there's a reason each of us has to do it.
Absolutely.
Why do societies repeat the same mistakes again and again? What, you think there's going to be another Holocaust? Of course. There's already been some. You think
absolutely.
War? Of course. You think people are going to treat each other horribly again? We have a double dark age? Of course. Why is that? Because the need for the individual to go through these things is to prepare. Don't ask me for what for, but to prepare trumps everything else. And
yes.
That's why history, both personally and by societies, gets repeated. That's the mission of humans. That's what consciousness is. You know, we know from, you mentioned near-death experiences, that people who have absolutely no brain function are hovering over a bed watching an operating room.
Sure.
Eating back.
Sure.
Well,
yes.
What's that? What's that about, right?
Right.
What is or the soul? This, like yes. You said earlier, I don't have the answers. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know. But I know there's something else going on.
I agree.
And therefore, from that, you can conclude that there is a purpose to each of our lives. And to me, the purpose is spelled out in the need for these relationships. and to help other people. And that's what Franklin's trying to do.
He sure is.
He fixed the world and to show people that there's a story here, that there's a reason. There's a reason for incredible optimism. This is a very optimistic book, as you know. I don't think anybody could finish this book without having a smile on their face. Maybe they didn't love it. You know how some people.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think anybody could say this wasn't to have some sense of optimism at the end. And certainly in a time like this past year we've had, boy, we need optimism. And there's
there's
a reason to have it. And I think that's what Franklin's really trying to do.
You know, it's perfect that the book came out now short while ago because it we really all need it. And I'm seeing, you know, a barrage of people, of course, trying to cope with the pandemic and everything else in their lives, unemployment, depression, anxiety. You know, we don't, like you said, the most important thing are relationships and giving. And, you know, we've all been separated by these masks and these spatial distancing rules. And we just really are very, you know, it's made us paranoid about friends or who they've been with and family and who else they've been with. And, you know, of course, this is something that is, I guess, part of our learning journey, that how can we cope through this? This is our journey.
I'll tell you something interesting about the mask. So, you know, when you see patients as a doctor, you know, the interaction is so important, right?
Yeah.
Two-way interaction. It's not a one-way interaction. That's the best part of being a doctor. Well, when everybody has a mask on and you want it and you have to stay away from each other, you can't put your hand on a patient. Well, now you probably can't put your hand on a patient anyway, but besides.
Right. There's lawyers out there. No.
Yes. Right? But the point is that when you don't have that, boy, you lose a lot. Everybody, the doctor loses, the patient loses. So I can't wait for us to get these masks off our face, which I believe is going to happen extremely soon. Extremely soon. I think by the summer, we're going to be.
Oh, I do too.
So that's another reason for optimism.
Yes, optimism about, also about, you know, the new government.
Do we have time for one more theme in this book? Do we have time to
discuss? Oh, yeah, we do.
Oh, excellent. Well,
we do.
One of the things I want to talk about is choice, because this is another really optimistic, good little nugget, I think, for people to take away. So most of us worry, and I'm sure you see this in your practice all the time with your anxiety patients, you know, about making a decision. And I'm not just talking about whether you eat a hamburger for lunch or eat a salad. I'm talking about things like, should I marry this person? Should I buy this house? Should I take this job? And blah, blah, blah. All these things we decide.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And people, you know, we just go crazy. I don't know which is the right choice, which is the right choice.
Right.
So Yogi Berra was a famous New York Yankee catcher, and he's well known for his malapropisms. And one of the favorites is, what do you say when you get to a fork in the road, right? When you get to a fork in the road, take it. And people go, it's so funny, right? But Yogi was right, and I'll tell you why. It has to do with choice and what choice really means. So I'm going to use an analogy. Imagine every time you make a choice, you release a little bubble, like a little soap bubble. Your body. You make a choice, that soap bubble goes out of your body. Now, what happens to that bubble? Well, instantaneously, it finds itself surrounded by the billions of other choices, the billions of other bubbles coming from the 7 billion people on the planet. And it's just getting whacked around. That bubble is on its own for about a millisecond, and then it's just getting pushed around from one to the other, meaning you have no idea where that bubble is going to be. You have no idea what that choice is going to end up with. When you make a choice, it's out of your hand. You let the people go, and you have no idea what's going to happen. So the whole idea of a right choice or a best choice is completely incorrect. Because if you took choice A, you will encounter certain people. Maybe a choice A will lead to great fame and fortune, or maybe it'll lead to your premature death. You have no, because all these other choices are impacting that. You're being impacted by billions of other choices. This whole idea of free will we talked about earlier.
Right, right.
Not what it's cracked up to be. Because when you release that bubble, bang, it's getting moved, shoved around by billions of other bubbles. So the message is there's no such thing as a right choice. There is no way to know there is no such thing as a right choice. Each choice will just give you a different path, and you have no idea what's going to happen on either one. So you can't possibly know ahead of time which choice is the better. It's impossible. We shouldn't even say best choice or right choice.
Right.
They do nothing. Make a choice, let it go. I learned that from my wife, who's like one of the
lovely
most people on the planet.
Oh, that's amazing.
So,
that's so lovely.
But it's so liberating.
It is so liberating. So
I don't have to worry about my choices.
Yep.
You don't have to worry. Make one and move on. It's out of your control.
That's it. It's trusting in the unknown in a way. And it's very freeing to say it's okay. It's all right. Because perhaps if it doesn't go so well, I needed to learn this lesson. Perhaps I needed to learn this from this experience and this choice I made. It's important, I also believe, and I'm sure you do too, to get in touch with that intuition, you know, within yourself. And even that, you may make the wrong choice as well.
The point is, you can't make the wrong choice because
you can't.
You control. It's not like you're driving the whole way from the choice to the end.
Yeah, right.
You know, once that choice is out of you, you have no control over it. Forget.
That's true.
That's the point. And so that to me is so liberating. You know, you asked me a question earlier about Martin Luther King and Franklin.
Yes.
And other people. So Franklin, yes, later in the book meets Martin Luther King and during his time travel. And I have to tell you, when I wrote that chapter, I felt, and I'd done a lot of research beforehand, I felt like I was talking to Martin Luther King. And
when love it.
Again, this sounds so strange. And
No.
I'm a professional actor. I know you're in California. I'm not a professional actor. I can't fake it. What you see is what you get. And I was so, at the end of the chapter, I personally was moved by that chapter. I mean, it sounds insane, right?
No, but, I hear you.
And to write, to have a chance to, even though it was fiction, to, in a sense, talk to Martin Luther King and kind of explore his mind, especially in the time we're in now.
Yes. Right?
Which to me, we're getting completely wrong. Completely wrong. We should be bringing people together. Not separating people.
Absolutely.
The separation is the worst thing we could do. Like I'm a white guy and I work for the last 40 years with the vast majority of people I work with are black. Just so happens I'm in Washington, D.C. You know, and so the people I work with, my colleagues, my assistants, people I've worked with, the majority of them are black. You know, I can tell you, we don't go to work every day and look at each other and say, you're black, you're white. You know, no. And why is it? Because we could become a family.
Yeah, exactly.
Family. We've been to each other. Right.
Exactly.
The more we bring people together, the better. The more we stay separate, the worse. So we should be doing everything now to bring us
true.
Together. Not to create more and more groups and identity groups. Right. And groups. No.
I agree.
There's one group, right? There's two
groups. I agree.
There's the good people.
I agree.
And there's the not so good people, right? Pick one group.
That's right.
That's it.
True.
Can't differentiate
people
any other basis.
That's right. I always suggest that people surround themselves, you know, with people of like-mindedness. And if you're in a higher vibe or however you want to put it, if you're more of a loving, giving person, I mean, you know, it only, you know, encourages more of that, you know, around you and of course what you're giving out. So we're just about out of time here already. And you're an amazing guest. Thank you so much for sharing your wonderful book with us. Again, it's Franklin Rock. There you go, guys. And it's a wonderful journey. It's a novel, but it is, to me, more like a lesson for you all to learn different concepts about love, what's really important in life, the quantum consciousness concepts, so many different things from some of the wonderful, inspirational people who Franklin, our protagonist, meets along the way. And this book was all the creation of Mark E. Klein, MD, and you are all of that goodness. And I know that. So I appreciate that so much. And I appreciate you being here on the couch with me today.
Well, you were very kind to have invited me and I had a wonderful time.
Good. A lot of knowledge. Thanks for sharing that with my listeners.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Okay, guys, again, if you want to find out more about Mark and his book, you can just go on Amazon. It's easy to get. Franklin Rock. And it's a novel. It's wonderful. His two earlier books, What Do I Do Now? A Handbook for Life. Got to read that too. And The Currency of Life, Uncovering the Clues of Why We Are Here. All right, guys, as I always say, take care of yourself first and then you'll be great for the others. And that's the way it works in the world. Thanks for joining me on the couch and have a beautiful week and a good evening. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.